Levi, Simeon, and Dinah. Simeon, the second son of Leah and Jacob, and the full brother of Reuben, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. Simeon is also the ancestor, the person for whom the tribe is named, of the tribe whose territory is found within the southern limits of Judah. The text of Genesis 29, verse 33 says, "And she conceived again, and bare a son, and said, Because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, that is, hearing." The classical rabbinical sources argue that Simeon was very fearless, but also very particularly envious, and so had always been antagonistic and spiteful toward Joseph, owing to Joseph being Jacob's favorite son. In the biblical Joseph narrative, when Joseph, having settled in Egypt, asks his brothers to bring Benjamin to him, he takes Simeon hostage to ensure that they return. According to classical rabbinical sources, Joseph chose Simeon to be the hostage because he was concerned that if Simeon wasn't separated from Levi, then Levi and Simeon might destroy Egypt together, since they had already destroyed Shechem. Another theory was that Joseph singled out Simeon due to his taking a prominent role in Joseph's betrayal. However, there's no mention of this in the actual narrative. Levi was the third son of Jacob and Leah, and the founder of the Israelite tribe of Levi, the Levites, and the grandfather of Aaron and Moses. In the book of Genesis, Levi is described as having fathered three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. A similar genealogy is given in the book of Exodus, where it is added that among Kohath's sons was one Amram, who married a woman named Jochebed, which, Numbers 26 and verse 59 tells us, was the daughter of Levi. They were the parents of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. The names of Levi's sons and daughters are interpreted in classical rabbinical literature as being reflections on their future destiny. In some apocryphal texts, such as the Testament of the 12 Patriarchs, in the Book of Jubilees, Levi's wife, his children's mother, is named as Milcah, a daughter of Aram. In accordance with his role as founder of the Levites, Levi is referred to as being particularly reverent. The blessing of Moses speaks about Levi via an allegorical comparison to Moses himself, which the Haggadah, the document that is read at each Passover by the fathers to teach their sons, take to support the characterization of Levi and his progeny as being by far the greatest of his brothers in respects to faithfulness. The book of Malachi argues that the Levites were chosen by Yahweh to be priests because Levi, as minister of God, was reverent, revered Yahweh, was in awe of God's name, upheld peace, was a model of good morality, and turned many people from sin. Genesis 29 and verse 34 states that the name Levi refers to Leah's hope for Jacob to join with her, implying a derivation from Yelowah, meaning he will join, but scholars suspect it may simply mean priest, either as a loan word from the Menahean Lawi, meaning priest, or by referring to those people who were joined to the Ark of the Covenant. Dinah is the daughter of Jacob, the father of 12 sons, and thus the 12 tribes of Israel, in the ancestor narratives of Genesis. She is born to Leah after Leah has given birth to 6 sons. Leah names her, as biblical women often did as part of the maternal role. Of Jacob's daughters, only Dinah is mentioned by name. Dinah, that means judgment. This portion of the book of Genesis deals primarily with the family of Abraham and his descendants, including Dinah, her father Jacob, and her brothers. The traditional view is that Moses wrote Genesis as well as most of all the rest of the Torah, doubtlessly using varied sources, but synthesizing all of them together to give the Hebrews a history, a written history, of their ancestors. This view, which has been held for past several thousand years, though it is not explicitly mentioned in either the Hebrew or the Christian Bibles, it holds that Moses included this story primarily because it happened, and he viewed it as significant. It foreshadows later happenings and prophecies further along in Genesis and the Torah dealing with the two violent brothers. There is a prophetic blessing pronounced upon the two tribes of Simeon and Levi. Genesis 49, verses 5 through 7, from the RSV. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. O my soul, come not into their counsel. O my spirit, be not joined to their company, for in their anger they slay men, and in their wantonness they hamstring oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel. Here's another harsh verdict, and undoubtedly two more stunned inheritors. Jacob sees his second and third-born sons in the same light, with similar personal attributes and characteristics, therefore, apparently, and I say apparently, sharing a common destiny. They are both brothers in violence, and so they shall be brothers in their transgressions. Unlike Reuben's primary offense, which was done in secret, Simeon and Levi had committed their greatest offense for everyone to see, and they were proud and unrepentant for what they had done, to boot. Let's revisit just what the great offense of Simeon and Levi was, as told in Genesis 34. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her, and lay with her, and humbled her. Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his cattle in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had wrought folly in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done. The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully, because he had defiled their sister, Dinah. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we consent to you, that you will become as we are, and every male of you be circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people." On the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came upon the city unawares. And they killed all the males, and they slew Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and went away. And the sons of Jacob came upon a slain and plundered city, because his sister had been defiled. Thus, the primary thrust of this blessing was that neither Simeon nor Levi would partake in the promised land in the same proportion as their brothers. This as a result of their bloodlust and cruelty as demonstrated upon the citizens of Shechem. They would instead be divided and scattered. And that is exactly what took place. Let me give you a hint in advance of what happened to Simeon and Levi. Remember that one of God's governing dynamics is to divide. Divide, separate, and elect. It deceives mankind that looks upon division as an automatic negative. Let's look first at Simeon, who would become the smallest tribe by the time of the census of Numbers 26. And, like Reuben, struggle simply to stay in existence and to maintain a separate tribal identity. In a census reported in the early part of the book of Numbers, Simeon is said to have a population of 59,300. Within a mere 40 years, however, the census of Numbers 26 shows their population has shrunk by over 50% to 22,200. Now, just for the sake of clarity, the census would have only been of men, and only men in the prime and middle portions of their lives. This is often expressed in the Hebrew idiom as men capable of bearing arms. So this is probably something on the order of ages 20 to 50 years old. Males younger and older than this, children, the elderly, the disabled, they weren't counted. Neither were females of any age or status. Further, when we find Moses officiating over the handing out of the tribes and the land inheritances, Simeon is given territory within Judah's territory, technically, and more accurately, certain cities within Judah's territory. Simeon's territory was like the round bullseye in the center of a target. They were completely surrounded by the tribe of Judah. Worse yet, the area they occupied within Judah was primarily the Negev, an arid desert. Simeon was probably the first tribe to be absorbed by the other tribes, with some of them joining with Judah, others joining what would eventually become known as the 10 northern tribes of Ephraim. There was even mention in the First Chronicles of some members of the tribe of Simeon leaving the Holy Land altogether and joining with Edom. And recall that Edom was the descendants of Esau, Jacob's twin brother. Jacob said they would be scattered. How true this proved to be. Levi suffered through a similar, though non-destructive, fate as concerns the land and territory. Levi, as with Simeon, was not given its own territory. Rather, it too was given cities. 48 cities, but within the tribal boundaries of every tribe. However, Levi was divided and separated out to become God's own priests. In Hebrew, God's Kohanim. Members of the Jewish priesthood, the Kohanim, are the unusual group that the men of this ancient priestly class can claim descendant from a single male ancestor. According to biblical accounts, the Jewish priesthood began about 3,000 years ago, when Moses anointed his older brother Aaron as the first high priest. It was the Levites who would officiate all matters in the wilderness tabernacle, and then the temple. So while Simeon was destined to a significant loss of its tribal identity and near extinction, Levi, separated from Israel, became a holy matter. What an incredible thing it is that Jacob's prophecy so accurately depicts the ironically similar, yet opposite fates of Simeon and Levi. Look once again at Genesis 49 and verse 7, at the end of it, where it says, "I will divide them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel." Both actions happened, but each in its own way. Levi was divided, separated, and elected away from the other tribes to become priests to God. And Simeon was utterly scattered into all the other tribes of Israel. Levi maintained their identity, and Simeon mostly lost theirs. Often we will see in Scripture two phrases or sentences back to back, which appear to be simply like a repetition. As in verse 7, "I will divide, I will scatter." Usually this is just a standard Hebrew literacy device called a doublet or a couplet. At other times, though, there is a subtle and important message being introduced, and it is not the same thing being said, just in two different ways. May also mention that, as an aside, that whereas particularly in the prophets it looks to be unarguable that there is much repetition, in fact, it is because of the near impossibility to translate Hebrew word structure into English. One of the reasons that is so is because the Bible was originally created in a structure that was to be learned through the spoken word and through hearing. This is as opposed to our English, Latin, French, and German translations that were written in a style meant to be absorbed by reading. While to those of us who are not literary professionals, the difference between creating a speech designed to be absorbed by the ears versus creating a manuscript designed to be absorbed by the eyes might not seem apparent. The differences are substantial. It is interesting to note that even up to our time, the Levites are seen as separate from the rest of Israel. Jews do not regard the Levites as Jews. They are separate and distinct, even if the rest of the world, through ignorance, doesn't make this distinction. God does. And considering we are in prophetic times, it might be wise for us to understand and acknowledge it, because the time is near that the Levites are going to, once again, play a prominent role in Judaism. So the end result of Jacob's pronouncements are that the first three brothers, the eldest, are now dispossessed, and their blessings look more like curses to them. Let's look at this from a different point of view. Just before Jacob died in Egypt, he sent an urgent message to all his 12 sons, calling them together. He proclaimed a blessing and made a prophecy about each one of his boys. One by one, he spoke publicly to them, all of them listening intently. They would never hear such important words again. He spoke first of all to his oldest son, Reuben. You would expect the firstborn son to receive this special status. Because of his wickedness, this is forfeited. So it passed down to the next in line, his second and third sons by his wife Leah, Simeon and Levi. Alas, these brothers were also wicked men, unworthy of receiving the birthright. We are told bluntly, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Why did their father say that? What is the point of it? All the 12 men standing before him were his sons, and so were brothers. Why does he start his prophecy by pointing out that Simeon and Levi were brothers? The answer is that they were not brothers merely in a sense of biological relationship, but also in the sense of the mind and the disposition and the values and enthusiasms. Levi was a brother to one who destroys. They were a team, working together and walking alongside the same unscrupulous track as one. They were tuned into the same evil frequency. There was not a membrane you could place between them, Levi being just as guilty as Simeon. Jacob specifies their wickedness, not now gross sexual sin like their older brother, but that they were men of extreme cruelty. Their swords are weapons of violence. Do we have this today? Are we not sickened and hardened by the accounts in the news of horrific violence in faraway countries like Afghanistan, Sudan, Pakistan? There are the horrors of modern warfare and the torture and cruelty inflicted on women and on children, on prisoners. There is the drug trade and the enslaving of women and the cruelty inflicted on the unborn child. We live in one of the most violent and heartless generations in the history of the world. How things seem to be different to be when these boys were born. Their rejected and neglected mother, Leah, had thought, "Now my husband will be joined to me. He will be bound to me by our natural affection for our sons and our mutual child support. There will be this band holding the marriage together," so she thought. So the name given to the third son was Levi, and Levi comes from the word to bind. "Now Jacob and I will be bound together. I know he loves Rachel more than me, but I have given him three sons." And so she was full of hope at the sight of three little boys running around the family home. She would see lots more of Jacob, the doting father, and so there would develop a love relationship between them both. But it takes more than that and other things than having children together to guarantee husband and wife going on in a relationship of love. Having children can also be used to drive a couple apart. Many can experience what Leah was to experience, that these things didn't work out as hoped, and that many a time the purposes of God are of an entirely different nature. In fact, Levi was a very appropriate name for her third son, but not in the way Leah thought, for Levi was bound up with Simeon. He was totally under the influence of his older brother. So the time came when the brothers' swords became weapons of violence. Remember the infamous occasion in the story of Dinah, when Simeon and Levi heard what happened to their sister? They were outraged. They were filled with fury at what had been done to their kid sister. What inhumane cruelty. What an overreaction to a bad deed. Every single man butchered in his bed. All the widows and fatherless girls were taken as plunder to be slaves. It was the Holocaust of Shechem, perpetrated by Simeon and Levi, the sons of Jacob. These were the Old Testament Messiahs, Old Testament brothers in the truth, the great-grandsons of Abraham, a family of believers in the Lord acting in this way. Here were men who lived under the law that said, "Love your neighbor as yourself," which also said, "You shall do no murder." It was male genocide, plotted by lies and deceit. There was no justification for the action, and every reason for cursing it. So that now Jacob, these years later, pronounces the curse upon his sons. The horror of what they did is still fresh before him. He stands and turns to all their brothers and says of Simeon and Levi, "Cursed be their anger, their fierce, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. No blessing for them. They are not to receive an inheritance." Reuben had forfeited it, and now Simeon forfeits it, and Levi forfeits it. They are not to receive an inheritance in Jacob. Levi will never have a parcel of ground about which people will say, "That valley to the north, and that hill to the south, and that spring to the east, and that river to the west, all belong to Levi." No. Levi's descendants are going to be scattered throughout all Israel. They will live in every town and village and hamlet with little white houses on distant hillsides, and in them the members of the tribe of Levi will live. They will not have a homeland where their kinfolk live, the place the Levites call their home. No home area at all. That is the curse that came upon their children and children's children to the fourth and fifth generation. That is where the curse rested for the killing men in their anger and hamstringing oxen as they pleased. Oh, avoid the brothers Simeon and Levi. Blessed is the man who does not walk in such ungodly counsels. Remember the stark warning of being influenced by violent men, here in the first chapter of the book of Proverbs. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for the blood. Let us wantonly ambush the innocent. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot among us, and we will have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Proverbs 1, verses 10 through 16 from the RSV. In days of riot and looting and crime, should we not heed such a warning? Even old Jacob, the father patriarch, still needs to address himself after seeing their wretched behavior, warning himself of the danger of falling into bad company, such as his very own sons. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly, for they have killed men in their anger. Evil counsel corrupts good living. What a sorry situation exists in the family of Jacob. Surely Reuben, the firstborn, will get the inheritance, but that man grossly sinned against heaven, against his own father, doing things that are not mentioned among the Gentiles. And so he lost the birthright. Coming to Simeon, surely the birthright will be his, but he shows that he's a raving psychopath. Cursed be you, my son. Then the third in line is Levi, and he is one with his brother. They fuel one another's wickedness. The one as corrupt as the other, a pair of mass murderers. Cursed be you, my son. Cursed be your fierce anger. Cursed be your cruel fury. Levi, too, has forfeited the birthright, and we begin to wonder, when will this end? Who will be worthy to receive it? Which of these boys has not been guilty of sins that means he has forfeited the right to receive the blessing that should come upon the firstborn? Reuben has gone, and Simeon has gone, and Levi has gone. All stand before us as examples of gross evil, and they were all raised in the family of the patriarch Jacob, the grandson of our father Abraham. The prophecy is this: I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. Jacob, you realize, is speaking in the name of Yahweh. And when we look at the subsequent history of the lines of Simeon and Levi, we find out that this is exactly what happened. There was no place for them in Israel. But when you look at the two different tribes, then you discover that the scattering of Levi was to be of an entirely different nature from the scattering of Simeon. Simeon was scattered when the tribe was slowly, imperceptibly, and remorselessly, mostly annihilated. 4 centuries later, at the Exodus, they still existed, numbered with Reuben and Gad, after the 40 years and the wandering in the wilderness. A striking change has taken place. There was a census, and instead of almost 60,000 fighting men, as they had at the beginning of Exodus, they have shrank to just 22,000 men. They are now the smallest tribe. Moses mentions their existence a few years later in Deuteronomy 27, but when he blesses all the tribes of Israel in Deuteronomy 33, there is no mention of Simeon. There is no portion of land whatsoever allocated to them. They just have a few towns within the borders of Judah. Levi, too, was scattered, but very differently from the destruction of Simeon. There came a crisis in the life of those who were Levites, and when they could have taken the wrong option, and then they'd have ended up just like Simeon. As Shakespeare once said, there is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. The time for Levi came at the rebellion at Sinai, when Moses had spent days away from the people on the mountain that smoked and thundered, receiving the law of God, and the people were terrified. Moses came down the mountain with his face shining. What did he hear? The sound of music and drums. And what did he see? He saw dancing around a golden calf. And what did he learn? That his own brother Aaron had asked for gold from the people and had taken thousands of earrings, and he had them melted down, and they had been fashioned into the likeness of a cow. And Aaron had said, "Behold your God, O Israel," and the people who had known deliverance from slavery in Egypt and were being escorted to a land flowing with milk and honey, the people who had walked through the Red Sea on foot and were fed with bread from heaven each day, were actually bowing down to this crude idol and dancing in joy around it. Thank you for being our God. Moses was shattered at the sight, and he symbolically shattered the tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments. That stopped the music and the dancing. What did Moses say? He challenged them as to their loyalties. Who is on the Lord's side? There was a silence, finally broken by the voice of Simeon's brother Levi, shouting out, "Here am I." Were they words? Was that a mere profession? What did Moses say next? "Go through the camp and slay the idolaters." "Here am I." "Really? Are you with the Lord? Or are you among those who speak with their lips of being loyal to God, but whose hearts are far from him? A profession without any action is dead." The Levites unsheathed their swords, those swords handed down from their fathers, those swords that had been used in the massacre of the men of Shechem, now went through Israel, and with Yahweh's approval, slew mercilessly those who had turned from the living God and showered their adoration on a golden image of a cow. The righteousness of Yahweh was avenged by Levi's words, "Here am I," in deeds. Levi had borne through every generation the marks of Shechem, but now was the time to expunge that wickedness by showing a repentant heart and a life of new obedience to the Lord. That did not wipe away the past. That past was there to haunt Levi and make Levi groan and vow that such a monstrous deed would never be done again. Here was his opportunity to show a radical new obedience that was in his heart. So Levi is certainly scattered through Israel, or Jacob. There was no section of the land given to him, no mountain high and no valley low, no house, no city, but he is going to find a place in the house of the Lord. That is going to be his dwelling place. That is where he is going to dwell. There will be a list, a schedule of who has to take care of what duty and when, and it will be his turn as one of the tribe of Levi to leave his family in the village street for a month and go to Jerusalem and serve in the temple of the in the name of the Lord. So he will be scattered, but also elevated, and that is his glory. The curse still rests upon him. No inheritance is given to him, but the Lord is his inheritance, and the Lord is his Lord's house is his true home. And every house in Israel, every house in Jacob, is going to stand open to him. He's going to have access to every home in Israel as a teaching, pastoring Levite. Not only that, but all Israel is going to give him the tenth, the tithe. It is going to be brought to Levi. That is the ironic way in which God deals with his people. That is the way he leads them. This Levi, the brother in crime of Simeon, with such a wretched beginning, now blossoms out in such a glory that means he stands in the temple of God, that he becomes a mediator for all the other tribes as they come to God through the sacrifices and the rituals that he performs in their names. Levi stands in the temple of the Lord. What a great end after such a bad beginning. You see it again in the history of the Ecclesia. Saul of Tarsus, the torturer, becomes a teacher. The persecutor becomes a preacher. The bigot becomes baptizer in Jesus' name. Your violent past need not impose itself irresistibly on your future. Sin has abounded, true, but grace does much more abound. The whole history of the tribe was turned around even while the whole condemnation spoken by Jacob actually came to pass. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. Yes, that occurred, but the dispersal becomes the scattering of salt throughout the nation. You, Levi, will be the salt of the earth, the presence of men of God all over Jacob. You will help fight the putrefaction of Israel. The whole history of this tribe has been turned around and cast into a different mold. It began in sin. It ended in consecration. It began in weapons of violence. It ended with weapons of righteousness. It began with a curse, and it ended with a blessing. Why does God do such things? If the murderers of all the men of Shechem can become priests and Levites, if the parasitic torturer Saul of Tarsus can suffer to bring Christ to the nations, then there is room in the kingdom of God for everyone here. God is able to take a murderer of Shechem and use him in priestly service. He could take an SS prison guard from Auschwitz, or a Japanese soldier herding British prisoners of war to build a bridge on the River Kwai, or a serial killer like a so-called Son of Sam, and regenerate men who've shown such depravity and make them new creatures in Jesus Christ, who are now presenting their bodies as living sacrifices to God each day. Then I stand in amazement at what God's grace is able to do. There is hope for each of us. The curse we deserve for our ungodly ways has fallen on Golgotha. Christ was made a curse for us, that we might be the blessed of God. Now, according to Jewish tradition, Simeon and Levi were only 14 and 13 years old, respectively, at the time of the rape of Dinah. They possessed great moral zealousness. Later in the episode of the Golden Calf, the tribe of Levi would demonstrate their absolute commitment to Moses' leadership by killing all the people involved in idol worship. But their anger was misdirected here. As an interesting aside, if you think about it for a second, if they're 14 and 13, and three more sons were born from Leah before Dinah was born, what age does that make Dinah? Probably about 9 years old. Very young. The tribe of Simeon received the land within the territory of Judah and served as itinerant teachers in Israel, traveling from place to place to earn a living. The tribe of Levi received a few cities of refuge spread out over Israel and relied for their sustenance on the priestly gifts that the children of Israel gave them. Now, blame can be placed for the massacre on the Shechemites on the disturbed family relationship between Jacob and Leah, with emphasis on the violence of Simeon and Levi. Jacob rebuked Simeon and Levi, saying, "You have sullied me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land." It seems this complaint was directed at their misguided tactics. Decades later, Jacob on his deathbed instructed his other sons not to take heed to the counsel of Simeon and Levi. He defined them as cruel, a term he used twice, cursed their anger, and wanted to separate them from their brothers. Levi apparently understood the need for repentance. Simeon did not. When Moses' grandson of Levi blessed the tribe shortly before his death, Simeon did not even appear among them. One may deduce that indiscriminate killing was rejected by both Jacob and Moses. Perhaps reading the text may illuminate us a little bit more. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Why the stress on Jacob as the father? It is obvious that since Dinah was the daughter of Leah, then Jacob was her father. She is under her father's protection, and it seems unlikely that she went out without his permission. The text tells us that the prince took Dinah and lay with her and dishonored or defiled her. Whether Dinah experienced shame or dishonor is not stated. The only other incidence of rape in the Bible is the assault on Tamar by her half-brother Amnon, who then took a hatred to her and banished her from his house, as we're told in 2 Samuel 13. How does Prince Shechem act? His soul cleaved to her, and he loved and spoke to her gently. In the entire Bible, the only other man portrayed as so loving to a woman is Jacob in his tender feelings for his wife, Rachel. Jacob kissed her the first time he saw her, and one could argue this could be construed, or misconstrued, as close to a defilement in that society. What is crucially different is that the mother of Dinah is not the beloved Rachel, but the despised Leah. Imagine a young girl whose father married two sisters, her mother and her aunt. He never loves or speaks tenderly to her mother, but only to her aunt. Leah's situations and feelings are reflected in the names she gave to Simeon and Levi. Simeon, because I was hated, and Levi, this time my husband will love me. Of course he does not. Her daughter Dinah does find a man who loves her and speaks tenderly to her. It seems likely that Dinah would be drawn to a man who shows affection to her that her father never showed to her mother. Shechem asked his father to arrange a marriage and was prepared to offer any price to marry Dinah. The sons, led by Simeon and Levi, aggressively announced to their father that they cannot give their sister to an uncircumcised man. Her brothers could take Canaanite wives, but other than the offsprings of Uncle Esau and great-uncle Ishmael, where could Dinah find a suitable circumcised husband? Prince Shechem did not hesitate to do it. The it is to be circumcised, that he was instantly willing to do, because he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. He and his father persuade all the males of the city to be circumcised. When they are still incapacitated, Simeon and Levi attack and slaughter all the males, enslave the women and children, and plunder the city. Dinah is, of course, never consulted about her preferences. Simeon and Levi say to their father, "Should he deal with our sister as with a harlot?" They acted according to a concept of honor that justified them in taking revenge on the perpetrator and all his tribe. They must have known, especially from their own names, that there was no love between their parents. Was it irrelevant to them that their sister was loved, or were they envious of what their mother did not have? Jacob clearly saw things differently. He was primarily concerned about the welfare of his family, now seriously threatened by the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. "My men are few in number, so that if they unite against me and attack me, I and my house will be destroyed." One learns more about Simeon later. He was the brother that Joseph chose to hold hostage in Egypt. That perhaps hints that he had been the leader of the assault on Joseph. The tribe of Simeon is missing from the blessing of Moses in Deuteronomy 33. Did Moses mean to exclude the Simeonites from the people of Israel? Zimri, a Simeonite, had sexual relations with a foreign woman in front of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. And Phinehas, a Levite, slew him with a spear. Told in Numbers 25. The tribe of Levi, Moses' tribe, had changed. The tribe of Simeon had not. This theme of vengeance in the story of Dinah contrasts with the event that precedes it. The reconciliation of Esau and Jacob. After 20 years of separation, it is Esau who repaired the relationship between the brothers. Esau decided reconciliation was better than the vengeance that he had originally sought. Hamor the Hivite had sought a merger with Jacob and his clan after an intermarriage seemingly acceptable to Jacob. One might speculate on how such a merger, had it come to pass, might have changed the future history of Israel and the Jewish people. But as we know, all things are under Yahweh's control.